Don't do that.
I would say it was not intentional, but it kind of was.
It was intentional. Yeah. Completely 100%.
Trying to get you to wake up. Are you awake yet?
Am I awake?
Well, you
no,
had,
I was asleep.
You mean you had to... Exactly. Sleep casting again.
Who did what?
You're sleep casting.
Do not disturb. There we go.
Yeah, I got mine on...
Sleep casting.
Yeah. I got mine on silent.
The podcast is sleep casting.
Yeah, we're sleep casting. So you get to listen to the sound. You get to listen to the sultry sounds of Brian and John snoring while we talk.
That's probably a podcast somewhere.
Sadly, it probably is.
The Snore Podcast.
Snore Talk.
Help you sleep.
Mm-hmm. See, we should be recording this. This is good stuff.
We are recording this.
Attention all personnel. The 4077, the MASH files with C-Bus Brian and C-Bus John, are very proud to welcome to Korea Captain B.J. Honeycutt. A reception will be held in the mess tent at 1700 hours. Unfortunately, Frank will be giving a welcoming speech, but Dana Cham will be served. That is all.
Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting, wonderful, and should be in the Sasonian episode of the MASH files.
What did you say, the Sasonian?
Yeah.
Is that a play on words between Susudio and Smithsonian?
Yeah, it's the museum that Phil Collins opened.
Okay.
The Sasonian. Sasonian.
Stop it. Yes.
It's hard to sing when you're laughing.
Yeah, you know.
Welcome to another episode of The MASH Files. I'm your host, as always, C-Bus Brian, here with...
C-Bus John.
And we're here to break down Season 4 of the hit television show, MASH. And we're changing up... I know, we're doing it again. We're changing up the methodology, the MO of the podcast once again. We're going to do...
Yeah, we're going to read the end credits for every episode.
Yeah.
That's it. It'll be a short...
That's all it'll be. Just the end credits.
That way it keeps you guys from snoring.
Yeah. We'll talk about the picture in the background, and we'll just read the credits as they appear on the screen. We're going to break down the episodes.
Sorry.
We're going to break down the episodes and the table. We're going to break the table.
Yep.
We're
going to spend 15 minutes talking about the color of the yellow that the letters appear in the credits.
I thought they were white.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yellow.
Okay. We're going to break down the episodes. We're going to do like one or two episodes per podcast episode. I mean, the episodes are piling up. So, on tonight's episode of the podcast.
Tonight's file.
On tonight's file, we're going to be breaking down parts one and two of season four's episode one, Welcome to Korea. And if we don't run too long, we'll jump into Change of Command as well.
I think we should break it into two episodes. I have a lot of notes for episode one.
Well, yeah.
All right, okay. We'll see. Considering where you watch it at, whether it was on Hulu or some other streaming service, or if you have the fortune of having the DVD and see how it was actually meant to be, then, it's like it's actually technically episode one.
The director's cut. Yes. It is one episode, just parts one and two.
Yeah.
So this... started off, aired on September 12th, 1975, directed by Mr. Gene Reynolds. See previous MASH file episodes for his background. And we open up, depending on if you watched the DVD or if you watched it on Hulu. I watched it on Hulu, so it's apparently, I just learned today from my esteemed colleague, that the opening on the DVD is different than the opening on Hulu. So... What's the phrase I'm looking for? Results may vary.
Yes, results may vary depending on where you stream from.
So I have it where Hawk returns from... Oh, this is the description of the episode. That I should do that first. Hawk returns from R&R to discover Trap has been discharged, and he rushes to the airport to say goodbye, where he meets Captain B.J. Honeycutt, Trap's replacement. So that's what it's about. And we open...
How dare you spoil it so early in the episode.
I know, right? We open, at least on Hulu, we open on the U.S. flag being raised in the camp and the words, I will go to Korea, credited to General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Actually, Eisenhower actually said, I shall go to Korea during his run for president in 1952. I need more tea. Here we go.
Just don't wed. Make sure you read. Don't wed.
Martini.
Is that what it is?
It's a T.
Oh, okay.
Martini. Okay. Eisenhower actually said, I shall go to Korea during his run for president. Just the picture of Lorenzo Schwartz. Okay.
Did not invent.
He did not invent vermouth, and I was rather upset about it. I almost called Hawkeye and said, "Why did you do that to me?"
Yeah, yeah. If you look it up, you'll find that there's a wiki page about vermouth and how it goes back. What was it, like the 17th century?
Oh yeah, it's old. Because it's an old wine, basically, sort of. So these words, "I shall go to Korea," on the screen, they're replaced with "a terrible place," credited to General Raymond W. Bliss. Bliss was the Surgeon General of the U.S. Army, and he encouraged the U.S. to use helicopters as medevac ambulances and brought into Korea civilian surgeons to use in the Korean conflict. So he's basically the reason why they're all there. But I could not find where he actually said this in a writing or something. It's a joke. I shall go to Korea, a terrible place.
Well, in the pilot episode, I mean, Hawkeye does say, he said, the only reason why I'm here is because I mistakenly opened a letter that was an invitation from President Truman.
Yes. Yes. But the reason why the civilian surgeons were brought into the army was because of Bliss. He brought them Bliss. Yay. His efforts to do all this lowered the death rates in World War I and II. And I, like I said, I could find no source of him saying that Korea was a terrible place. Radar bugles the camp into assembly. Frank is being his most frank, as he is now in charge because of the dearly departed Henry Blake. He threatens to promote Klinger if he doesn't stop wearing women's garments.
Ah, yes. It's spring, sir.
Yes. The hat. Remember
Don't forget
that.
To water the flowers.
Remember that, because he said it's spring. Mm-hmm. Frank's missing Danish ham. I thought that was funny. Somebody stole it from his office?
That's what he said.
Hello, honey, I'm home.
Yep.
Stop
here, corner of 42nd Street and Fifth Avenue.
When Hawkeye appears in a rickshaw type deal.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls up to the camp's assembly after being on an R&R. Hawk is charged $10 for his ride, but he gives the man $20. This is the equivalent of $232 in today's money. Thanks, Joe, indeed. But then again, he was going to charge him $10, which would be half of that, which is what, $115?
Take it from a man who has everything.
Granted, but we know the journey that he took in that rickshaw, depending on where the airport is or whatever. Or if he came from Tokyo. Damn, that's a long ride.
So,
Frank.
And those things didn't have shock absorbers.
No. He was on a bike, though, so at least he wasn't.
Well, that's true.
The driver was on a bike.
No, that's true.
Traditional rickshaw where you're holding onto the things. Hawk gives Frank a MacArthur doll and states, wind him up and he returns from anywhere. This is in reference to MacArthur saying, I have returned when he landed on the shores of, I'm going to say this wrong, Leyte Island on October 20th, 1944, when he recaptured the Philippines.
Ah.
I shall return. It became one of the most iconic phrases of World War II.
Hmm.
Hawk ignores Frank's orders as he walks to the showers, fully clothed, and gets in, because he's got a hangover from his R&R. Radar comes in to tell him about Trap leaving. He says he missed him, and he says he didn't leave me a note or anything or nothing. He's like, well, he did leave you something, but geez, don't make me do it. And he's like, what? What did he leave me? Give it to me. And
all right, Radar, but just remember, this was his idea.
Yeah, Radar kisses him on the cheek.
Yep. I like the one line he used. He says, before he told him, he was like, easy, Radar, take small sentences or something to that effect. He says, I have the Mount Rushmore of headaches. Six aspirin companies are bidding for my head.
Yes, yes. So Radar kisses Hawk on the cheek, and then Hawk kisses him back.
Once he realizes that, you know, it's only been 2 hours since Trapper left the camp.
Maybe he can catch him.
Yep.
And Radar jumps into the shower fully clothed. Corporal, why are you all wet?
Must be something in the water.
Yeah. Cut to Frank Burns in the commanding officer's office. Complaining to Margaret about Hawkeye. Margaret appears to be the one in charge as she is signing papers, signing the paperwork, and is sitting at the desk.
Do you think it would be okay if I took a pen and in a bold military hand wrote to Frank with eternal gratitude, Doug, yeah. I do not?
Oh, gee, Margaret, you don't let me do anything since I became commanding officer.
Right? And every time they showed that picture of MacArthur, which is probably
it's been made in many episodes.
It's probably a real picture of MacArthur, but for some reason this time, the striking resemblance between MacArthur and Bruce Willis kind of hit me. So the next time you look at it,
okay,
you know, just maybe I'll pull it up while we're on break or something, so you can see. But our listeners out there, check that out. He really could have played MacArthur. Maybe he did. I don't know. So let's see. Where am I? She's in charge. Margaret reminds Frank of when Trapp sedated him and shaved all the hair off his body.
Poor Frank.
I'd love to see that. Frank with no eyebrows.
Oh, my.
When Frank states, whatever happened to good old meat and potatoes Christianity? Margaret responds with, whatever happened to Amy McPherson? Amy Elizabeth Semple McPherson, also known as Sister Amy, and this is spelled A-I-M-E-E.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen that before?
Yes.
I think I have, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
I've even seen Jamie spelled J-A-I-M-E.
She was a Pentecostal evangelist who started the Four Square Church. In the 30s and 40s, she used radio to make that church into a mega church. And on May 18th, 1926, she disappeared from Ocean Park Beach, California, and was believed to have drowned. On June 23rd, she was found in Douglas, Arizona, stating she had been kidnapped. Maybe this is what Margaret is referring to, but Sister Amy died in 1944. So all should have known what happened to her, but maybe she's... Hawkeye bursts into Frank's office.
You left out the part about Amelia Earhart.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, Frank, that was Amelia Earhart.
Yeah. I actually just saw recently they think they have found her plane.
Yeah.
Somewhere south in an ocean, South America, Africa, somewhere.
Yeah, it was on the opposite side. Because everybody always talked about her going down in the Bermuda Triangle.
She was over the South Pacific area. Yeah.
Fiji and whatnot.
Yeah, somewhere, but they think they found her plane.
Yeah. I read that article, and I was surprised to say that it could take years to figure it out.
Well, I mean, I can imagine with being in the water that long, you know, how much decay and, you know, whatever water does to the various materials that the planes at the time were made from, you know, I can't imagine
probably
there's much
aluminum, and that doesn't rust.
That's true, but I just, you know. And, I mean, back then, you know, it's not like planes had cockpit voice recorders and data recorders, none of that stuff. So
But
hopefully they're able to figure out what happened. Anyway.
So Hawkeye bursts into Frank's office. He wants to leave for Kimpo to say goodbye to Trapp. And, of course, Frank refuses his request. Radar comes in, and we hear Captain Honeycutt. We hear the Captain Honeycutt's name for the first time. Radar is granted permission by Margaret. She gives him permission.
Permission granted, Corporal.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Frank.
And then Frank's like, huh?
It's okay. Oh, yeah. Permission granted, Corporal.
Yeah. Frank and Margaret drool over BJ's dossier. Stanford Medical School and Tai Phi Epsilon, which is a fraternity founded in 1910 in Columbia University. Stanford University does not have a chapter of Tai Phi, no. Tau Phi Epsilon.
Yep. There you go.
They continue to drool over Honeycutt's paperwork, hoping he'll be a Republican. Cut to Radar signing out a Jeep from Igor. That seemed weird to me.
Yeah, because he was not usually part of the, what do they call it? The
motor pool?
The motor pool.
Yeah, because we've only ever seen him in the mess tent being the cook, right?
Right. He had to fill in somewhere, I guess.
I guess.
Maybe they finally kicked him out of the, you know, because they got tired of the river of liver and an ocean of fish every day.
Hawk shows up to hijack Radar's Jeep. They drive off together, Hawk at the wheel, driving at great speeds to the delight of Radar.
Right.
He's just like, woohoo, yay, wah!
Radar, keep it down. I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah. Hawk blows by a checkpoint and is stopped by MPs a little later. He pretends that Radar is sick with, darn it, I practiced this, neuropraxia, which is a mild nerve injury.
Not to be confused with neurotaxicab.
Right. Typically heals with rest and time. So it is a real, not phenomenon. What am I looking for? It is a real...
It's a legitimate condition.
Condition. There we go. I didn't want to say disease because that didn't sound right. But it's mild. Hawk fools the MP into thinking it's an awful, contagious disease, and he lets them go. Mm-hmm. All these outside Jeep shots look familiar to me. Did they look familiar to you?
What's that?
The outside Jeep shots when they're driving around?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we think that the main path from basically the parking... what is now the parking lot, to the MASH site, at least...
the beginning part of it.
At least up to the visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
That all looked like that outside shots.
Yeah, some of that did.
To me.
Yeah, to me. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I just noticed some of the mountains and whatnot.
Yeah. You mentioned neuropraxia. Apparently, in its mild classification of peripheral nerve injury, which apparently it's common in athletes, most notably in football players.
Hmm.
Because of its injury, I guess what it does is it interrupts the conduction of nerve signals, causing temporary paralysis.
Oh, yeah. So maybe you feel a little numb or something. Because
and then you get, so it's caused by trauma or physical compression of a nerve against the bone and is not contagious as Hawkeye claims, nor are there side effects like, trying to bite your own nose.
Trying to bite your own nose off. So. I love when Radar's in the back just like, hunger, hunger, hunger.
Yeah. Yep.
So, okay, all these outside jobs. And then, at least on Hulu, this is where the commercial break is.
Mm-hmm. But nobody said we could do a commercial break in our podcast, though.
Well, we don't have any sponsors yet.
Oh, okay.
If you want to be a sponsor of The MASH Files, please go to themashfiles.com. So, commercial break.
You have no shame whatsoever.
I do not. You're lucky I'm not plugging my own band yet. I will be. But not yet.
Okay.
Fade in from the commercial break. Hawk and Radar have arrived at Kimbo.
Kimbo.
Kimbo. I even spelled it differently from the last time I did it. I did K-E-M-B-O instead of K-I-M-B-O on the last page. Jeez, old Pete. Okay, so they arrive in Kimbo. In the opening shot, we hear a PA announcement that states, Sergeant Sterner, report to maintenance. Sergeant Sterner on the double. Many MASH fans believe that this announcement is done by Wayne Rogers, also known as Trapper John. In 2002, Larry Gelbart stated it is not Rogers, but MASH writer Ken Levine said in 2016 that it was. So I'm going to play it, and we're going to listen to it, and...
You be the judge.
We'll all be the judge. So here we go.
Sergeant Sterner, report to maintenance. Sergeant Sterner on the double.
Do that again. Here we go.
Sergeant Sterner, report to maintenance. Sergeant Sterner on the double.
I will say that does sound like him.
Yeah, I thought that sounded like him, although I will say I watched the scene a couple times with some time in between. And the first time I was like, wow, that really sounds like him. And the second time that I heard it, I was like, no,
it was
Jimmy
doesn't
Lydon. Sound like him at all. And then, Jimmy Lydon. But yeah, I thought it sounded like him. It's not inconceivable that they might have had backup PA announcements.
Yeah,
laying around for just to throw them in.
Just random recordings.
Yeah,
they
do
use.
Throw them in moments of silence.
Yep.
In between somebody coming in or going out of a tent.
And as I mentioned before we started recording today, that what they're calling Kimpo in this episode, I believe that area. That those buildings and everything where they go, I believe, was also seen in the movie.
As Kimpo?
Yeah. I don't know if it's as Kimpo,
but it's
used in the movie.
Gotcha. So, they arrive, Radar and Hawk, part ways at the Matt's office, which I forgot to look up what Matt's meant.
Is that what the Quonset hut said? Did it say M-A-T-S or something?
Yeah, and Radar calls it the Matt's hut.
Oh, no.
Go into the Matt's hut. Yeah, I meant to look it up, but I didn't.
Okay.
Radar goes to look for BJ. He tells Hawk to go into the Matt's building to find out what happened with Trap. We follow Hawk into the Matt's office. where he encounters a sergeant trying to find out what happened to a general's pickles, which are missing, and is shocked to find out the general received green pimentos instead of red.
He hates the green ones. And don't forget the cuckoo.
While the sergeant is confirming an order of a gross of golf balls and a Swiss cuckoo clock, Hawk discovers he missed Trapper John by 10 minutes.
10 lousy minutes.
Mm, sad face.
Ah, Mets. Military Air Transport Service.
Ah, there we go. That's kind of like the...
And funny enough, when I searched for Matt's Hut Army, I see what looked like little Quonset huts.
Well,
that's the image in the image match. So anyway,
cut to outside the office. Radar introduces BJ to Hawk.
Did they ever figure out who was in charge of that delicatessen?
No.
Okay.
No, and whoever it is doesn't know the difference between red and green.
Guess not.
Maybe they're colorblind.
Could be.
Maybe. So we are introduced to BJ Honeycutt, played by Mr. Mike Farrell, born February 6, 1939, which means he just turned 85 years old. He got his start in TV with bit parts on McHale's Navy. He was in an episode of Monkees. He was in an episode of I Dream of Jeannie and Lassie, just to name a few. He has a long IMDb. His big break came when he landed the role of Scott Banning on Days of Our Lives. He played the character for 157 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was also a producer on Robin Williams' film Patch Adams.
Yes.
And I couldn't find anything to confirm this, but I read a line where Mike Farrell, knew the real Patch Adams, which is why he kind of wanted to do the movie. But I couldn't find anything to confirm that.
When you were looking it up, did it actually list him as a producing credit for that movie?
Yes.
Because I remember seeing... a video clip somewhere. It might have even been Mike talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there was some drama in behind the scenes in the movie because I guess he was set to produce it or help produce, and there was somebody else, and then somebody else in Hollywood who had a little bit of oomph behind his name came in and kind of took it from them.
Hmm. I don't know, because I think it might have been on IMDb that it was his production company that did it.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah, I remember there was something. I remember hearing something about that. But anyway.
Yeah. Mike is also, apparently, I didn't know this, but he's also known for his activism. He was co-chair of the California Human Rights Watch for 10 years, was on the board of advisors of the original Cult Awareness Network, and has been president of Death Penalty Focus for more than 10 years, being the first person to be awarded its Human Rights Award. Just to name a few, there were a lot more. He's been married to actress Shelley
Fabre,
thank you, since 1984. She played Christine Armstrong for 199 episodes of the TV show
Coach.
Yes, starring Craig T. Nelson. Yes.
And Dick Van Dyke's brother.
Oh, yeah. Jerry was in it. Yeah, that's right. And so was, I'm not going to know his name, but he plays Patrick Starr.
Okay.
On SpongeBob.
Holy super happy fun time!
Okay, well,
he was also in Oz and a few other things. But he played the coach's assistant, the tall, big, dumb guy.
Oh, yeah. I can see his face, but I don't know his name.
Anyway, so... They discover that the Jeep is missing. Somebody stole their Jeep. Radar states he's responsible for the Jeep and will have to pay for it. He could probably just return the one that he mailed home, though. They'd probably accept that.
Yeah, but it's probably still in pieces, so that'd probably take a while to return.
Maybe. Well, if it's still in pieces and still in the boxes.
Well, it could be.
Just ship the boxes back.
Yeah.
And bring back Charles Lamb.
Yeah, maybe.
If his mom hasn't eaten them already. When Hawk quotes Kipling,
Radar,
BJ,
Radar, if you can keep your head while all about you, all the rest of them are not. If you can keep your head while all about you are losing theirs, then you haven't probably checked in with your answering service.
Yes, which is mostly a Kipling reference.
Yep, comes from a poem Kipling. I cannot talk.
Nope.
That Kipling wrote called If.
If. Yes. BJ recognizes it. He gives a look of Hawk gives a look of being impressed.
Yeah.
The first real connection between these two.
Yes.
Start of it. It's peppered in these yep. in these two parts.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate connection between them is solidified later.
Yes.
That this is these two are now bosom buddies, blood brothers, whatever.
BJ's character is really put on display here in a well-written way. His offer to help, you know, with the Jeep and when with Radar, because Radar's like, oh my God, I'm responsible for the Jeep. He's like, is there anything I can do to help? He's very, mm-hmm. you know, I want to help. He's not wanting to get Radar in trouble by sneaking him into the officers' club when they make him a
corporal captain.
Yes.
How nice of him to offer some of his costume jewelry.
Yes. Cut to the interior of said officers' club. Hawk and BJ order bourbon and water, and I believe for the first time, Radar orders a grape knee-high, which I tried to get for this recording.
I've tried to find it, and there are places that sell it.
Yes, and they're however, all out.
But, yes, but online? Ooh,
oh, yeah, it's pricey online, but mm-hmm. There's. I'm not going to mention the name of the store because they're not sponsoring us. But down on Short North, there's a place
okay.
that I've gotten it before. I called them and said, hey, do you have grape knee-high? And they're like, oh, we do, but we're out right now. I'm like, okay. Well, then you don't.
I actually found grape knee-high in, of all places, Amish country. Up in the northern part of the state.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they have. Because I remember taking a photo.
Yes, because, you know, if you can find most places, if you can find the places that sell it in the glass bottle,
mm-hmm.
like on yeah. the show, although yeah. in the show it's a lot bigger.
Well, actually in the show it looks like it might be maybe a slightly wider bottle,
mm-hmm.
but as you go from the bottom of the bottle to towards the top, the tapering that occurs to the point that you get to the neck of it, I mean, it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a short, you know.
It's almost short, like it's a like, half-liter bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tall, it's a tall bottle, but yeah. there's a lot there. So the knee-high is a soft drink introduced in 1924 by Chiro Cola. They are currently owned by Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. Current flavors are grape, orange, peach, and root beer. We don't use straws in combat, fella. Yep. Radar says that when the bartender asks if he
quick
wants
trivia.
A straw.
What's the actor's name that plays the bartender?
No idea.
Reed Crookshanks.
Crookshanks?
Yes.
Crookshanks. Sounds like a Dickens.
Oh, yeah, Charles
yes,
Dickens.
It's a very Dickens-esque name.
Yes.
Crookshaw.
Yep, Reed Crookshanks. He's the bartender at Kempo's Air Base's Officers Club. And the interesting thing is, he is credited as simply Staff Sergeant in the closing credits. However, if you know anything about the military and the ranks and their insignias and so forth, apparently his insignia, if you notice, he only had three chevrons. Correct.
That's Sergeant.
Right. In the Air Force, as of September 1952, this was the rank of an Airman First Class, one grade below a Staff Sergeant.
Oh.
Because I think to get to a Staff Sergeant, you needed, I think, at least a minimum of a single rocker, perhaps?
Maybe.
Yeah.
We find out that BJ is married.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk mentions Professor Jerry Colonna.
Yes.
Gerardo Luigi Colonna, 1904 to 1986... was an American musician, actor, and comedian who played Bob Hope's sidekick on Hope's radio show and films.
Oh.
He voiced the March Hare in Disney's Alice in Wonderland and is known for his pop-eyed facial expressions and large handlebar mustache.
Mm, now I have to look him up.
He was characterized in many Merry Melodies cartoons. So you have seen his caricature before. For sure. I thought he was the guy who said, oh, hello there. But that's not him. Hawk explains his nickname, Hawkeye, which comes from
Last of the Mohicans.
Yes, Last of the Mohicans. His dad loved that book. BJ states he was in residency 2 months ago with a little house in Mill Valley and an 8-month pregnant wife when he was drafted. At least he got to see his baby first.
Correct.
Because he came back from boot camp. And, you know, she had had the baby already, which is...
Yeah, 5 weeks of indoctrination at Fort Sam Houston.
Yeah, and it kind of made me wonder, is like, well, they probably needed surgeons, so maybe the draft was just put on them no matter what. But it's like, single father, And I would hope that the Army wouldn't take a single father, not a father away from, you know, his firstborn.
Did he actually say that?
What?
I was just thinking now, the line where he says 5 weeks of indoctrination at Fort Sam Houston. I don't know if that, well, that might have been the case. I have to go back and look. And for some reason, that just popped into my head. But looking it up briefly, Fort Sam Houston is actually in San Antonio, Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But the Army will fly people around to take them to boot camp.
I know that.
BJ mentions top of the mark, which actually Hawk mentions again later. Top of the mark, which is a penthouse level bar located on the 19th floor of the Mark Hopkins Hotel on Nob Hill in San Francisco. The bar opened in 1939 and is still around. Road trip!
Okay.
We've got to go to Paco's first.
Paco's.
Yeah, I always say Paco's. Cut to a general and his Jeep pulling up outside the officers' club. Our heroes exit with Radar being scared by the sight of the general. They steal the general's Jeep. We fade to black. Fade in. PA announcer narrates as they drive into the 4077. Now, this is the end of part one on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is all going to be different if you're watching it on the DVD, apparently.
Right.
So the PA announcer is basically narrating what's happening as they drive into the 4077. Cut to Frank saying how he is going to train Honeycutt in his own image. Fade to black, end of part one. So, Welcome to Korea part two. Aired on the same night. It was, I believe you said it was the first time a MASH episode ran for an hour.
I think so. My notes suggest that this was an hour-long episode, and based on what you see on the DVD is actually an hour-long episode, you know, compared to what you would see on Hulu. Yeah. This was like supposedly their first episode, the first hour-long episode.
We were checking each other's notes, so to speak, and we discovered that Hulu, at least the version that Hulu has, which is probably the syndication version, kind of cuts off the ends of the episodes and rearranges them. So the opening of part two on Hulu, the PA states that it is September 1952. In part one, Klinger states that it's spring when Margaret takes his hat, looking at his hat anyway. And we open with the flags waving over the 4077. We cut to Frank waking up Radar.
Yeah.
Which you said is how part one.
I'm pretty sure that's how part one opens on the DVD.
Okay.
Even though in part one and part two are put together.
So basically what we're going through here is how the episode is supposed to open, or at least on the DVD opens, with Frank waking up Radar. They go outside, and this is sort of the way that it's set up for syndication is sort of a, last time on MASH without saying last time on MASH, a recap.
Yep.
So they go out. There's a little bit more with Frank going over to Margaret's tent and her coming out, and then they check their watches. 0516, hack.
Sir, what is it? I dropped my watch in the latrine. I really don't want it back.
And for it being a quarter past five in the morning, it is rather light.
Quite
outside.
Sunny outside. Yeah, that's
especially
one of my notes
for
here.
September.
Yeah, it's one of my notes here. Even though supposedly it's spring.
Yes, that too. So the camp is assembled, and then we cut to Margaret storming into Father McKay's tent to talk to Frank about a missing Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut to our heroes driving back to the 4077, even though
slowly but surely,
even though they got back before. And since this is part two, I thought, okay, part one was sort of the funny, let's be hilarious and comical, blah, 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 blah. Part two kind of had more of a harsher edge to it.
Oh, yeah.
As we get into it. I thought that was an interesting, even though it's one episode, but if you take the first half of the episode and look at it and go, classic MASH. And then the next half of the episode, you're like, classic MASH.
Sometimes you hear the bullet.
Yes, sort of. So they are stopped by the same MP, and they go through the disease routine again, although this time Radar's driving the Jeep because the other two...
He can drive now? Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
It's, honey, it's good therapy.
This is Captain Honeycutt. He's going to get on his nerves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they drive off after Radar starts to try to eat his own nose again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, the way that Gary Berghoff does that, it's hilarious. Cut to a family. Here we go. Cut to a family searching for landmines to know if the field is safe for oxen. The girls do it.
I hated that sequence.
Yeah. Hawk yells at them to stop, horrified
that
they make the girls check. And, of course, a mine explodes, and Super Radar launches into action and runs into the field to help get the girl out with the other girl in tow. There's two girls out there.
Mm-hmm.
They drive to a hospital. The father mentions that there's a hospital up the road. And most of the family, except for the father and the oxen, get into the Jeep. They drive off, and we cut to Frank with Klinger in the swamp. And I want to make a side note here that Klinger is in a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just put that out there for maybe the next episode. Except for earrings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So Frank is making Klinger clean the swamp for the new officer because they're still all like, yay, Honeycutt's going to be one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Frank finds Trapper John's hat, kind of looks at it and tosses it aside. Cut to our heroes, sans the Korean family, driving down the road with voiceover from Frank about what a privilege it is to serve.
Mm-hmm.
He also goes through a little routine about the United Nations and NATO and how good they are, except for all the foreigners.
Yeah.
BJ is shocked by the conditions of the primitive hospital that they just left. And then the Jeep blows a tire. And as they change the tire, they notice a bunch of locals walking up the road.
Yep.
Radar realizes he left... Oh, I love this. He left his bubblegum in the other Jeep. Hawkeye asks what picture was on the bubblegum card.
Yes.
Radar states, Rosalind Russell. Catherine Rosalind Russell, 1907 to 1976, was an actress, comedian, screenwriter, and singer who won 5 Golden Globes and a Tony, and she starred opposite Cary Grant in His Girl Friday. She is also the namesake of character Roz Russell in Night Court.
Really?
I love it when there's a Night Court.
Well, of course.
Connection.
Yeah, apparently she was also nominated for 4 Oscars.
Ah, yes. The walking locals pass by the Jeep and they all make their little, asides.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, most of it, 80 yard. A lot of this episode is 80 yard like crazy. They pass by the Jeep and then they disappear. And Radar thinks they may be guerrilla soldiers, and they're all very nervous, and they start changing the tire with all due haste.
Mm-hmm.
Then shots are fired.
Yep.
And I kind of noticed that, while they're trying to change the tires, I love this, will they fire at doctors? And they say they'll shoot at any movement, and I'm about to have one. but the way that the angles of the squibs going off on the Jeep, It seemed like that maybe they were, whoever was shooting at them was behind them and not the direction that they think they're coming from.
Right.
But whatever. They quickly put the spare tire on and just barely get it on and drive off.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes later they stop to secure the lug nuts and make sure everybody's okay.
But not before Radar has to salute the General's Jack.
Yes, yes. But it's General's Jack.
Well, salute it and get in.
Yeah. Chiclets calm Radar down.
Yes. I had a note about chiclets in here somewhere.
Ooh, I like
chiclets. Yep. I've never had a chiclet, actually.
It's kind of like a hard-shelled bubble gum that you eat, and then you have the bubble gum. But
yeah, according to my notes, it is an American brand of candy-coated chewing gum manufactured by Mondelez International. The brand was introduced in 1900. By the American Chicle Company, a company founded by Thomas Adams.
Ah, Mr. Adams.
I guess.
Whoop, whoop. Fade 2, U.S. soldiers walking down the road near a blown-up Jeep. Mm-hmm. This is one of the more serious moments here in this episode. Our heroes drive past, and they ask if anybody's from their home state. And, you know, anybody from Maine, anybody from Otumba,
anybody from Maine?
California.
From Vermont. Close, but no cigar.
Yeah.
Anyone from Iowa? Yo. Otumwa, Iowa? No, Otumwa did its bidding. They sent you.
That's it. You're the only one who was there. Then Shelling begins. Then Shelley begins singing. No, then
it's probably Shelley Fabre.
Yeah.
She pissed off that her husband was in Korea. She came to get him.
Yeah. So then the shelling begins, and they all scatter. BJ experiences his first dead soldier. He looks 12 years old.
Yeah.
They start working on a live wounded soldier, and the 80 double nickel is first mentioned, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that is true.
Which
is what MASH was based on. The fictional 4077 was based on the 80 double nickel.
Yes, 8055.
Indeed.
They put sulfur on the wounds, which I had to rewind it and say, but did he just say sulfur?
Sulfur.
This is done to prevent infections.
Yep.
They work on four or five soldiers. The shelling stops, and the remaining soldiers regroup and continue slowly walking down the road. I thought that was a little weird. They're just like, okay, guys, come on, let's go.
Come on, your mug faces, back on your feet.
Yeah, I know that the choppers are coming in.
Yep.
You know, we hear the choppers coming in. So, you know,
even though that was totally not, they were not coming in, it was actually just sound added to it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've heard the sequence that you hear of the helicopter blade spinning, I mean, you can tell where it repeats itself.
Yeah.
So.
But I just thought it was weird that they're like, okay, some of us are dead, some of us are wounded, but let's go. Come on. Let's keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe you would stick around for the chopper
to
land.
No man left behind, you know?
Well, to make sure at least the choppers get there and that they're at least semi-protected by the people with guns, you know?
You would think
so. Even though there's mortar shells, so they could be a mile away, but...
You would think so.
I don't know. I thought it was weird. So, we hear the choppers coming. We cut to Frank in his office on the phone, discovering radar had picked up BJ. And then we get a repeat of him telling Margaret that they will train Honeycutt in his image. This is, again, in the Hulu.
Oh, how little do they know.
Yeah, this is, again, in the Hulu version.
No, it's in the DVD, too.
Yeah, but not in the same spot.
Oh, yeah.
This was shown previous. Margaret, Frank. Margaret, Frank, for a moment there, you look like
you had a chin.
I thought that was like, oh, okay. That reminded me of, there's a story of when Carol Burnett did the movie Annie.
Okay.
Have you seen?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a scene where she goes into a closet or gets thrown into a closet or something. And they had to come back and do a reshoot for that scene after they had shot the movie,
mm-hmm.
which happens, you know, something didn't work right. But in between the time of her going into the closet and the door closing, after that filming was done, she actually went and had surgery to give her more of a chin. So she had to come back and do reshoots of her coming out of the closet, and she says, Carol Burnett says this. I'm not speaking out of turn. She says, I went into the closet without a chin and came out with one.
Okay.
So we cut to our heroes pulling up to Rosie's Bar, or Rose Bar, or Rosie's Bar, however you want to say it, next to Goldie's.
Mm-hmm.
They enter Rosie's Bar and get sake with beer and a knee-high, of course. Yeah, sake.
I tried it.
No
offense to those who like sake, but oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's not...
It's like the gin I tried a couple of weeks ago. And that supposedly was good gin, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that, yeah.
What was the brand? Tito's?
Tito's is vodka. Tito's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Beefeater.
Beefeater. Was that the gin I tried?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I mean, and I realize, you know, the gin that they made, I mean, I can only imagine it probably tasted 10 times worse, but just even a good gin, it's like, oh, how does anybody drink that stuff? Sorry. Anyway, go ahead.
So they enter Rosie's Bar. They get knee high and blah blah blah, and a fight starts going on in the background as Hawkeye talks about the 4077 and how he's closer to these people than any people that he's ever known. Blah mm-hmm. blah blah blah. All with this fight going on in the background, and I thought this is a little too fever dreamish for me.
They anesthetized to what's going on. Yeah, they just didn't care.
It's like I understand what they're doing. They're kind of showing it from BJ's perspective of like, you guys aren't freaking out about this. There's a mm-hmm. fight going on and blah blah blah, which I think what really kind of bugged me about it was it's kind of out of character for Hawkeye and Radar. I think they would have probably been like, hey, guys, stop. Or at least gone, you know, hey, MP.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're tearing up the bar.
That's true.
It's like we don't want our bar torn up. But they're just like oblivious beyond oblivious. And he's just like, what the hell? What?
Yeah, and this is actually, you know, just occurred to me while we were talking. This was an episode where they're in Rosie's bar and there's no Rosie.
Yeah, her name is Kim.
Yeah, she's Kim. Behind it's like, okay, I guess Rosie had the day off.
Yeah. She's over at Goldie's.
She's probably the one that initiated the fight.
Yeah.
They were fighting over her.
So we cut to our,
trying to get free alcohol.
Our heroes, now well inebriated, coming out of the bar. Of course, Radar's not inebriated.
Of course not.
No, this isn't season one. Please. So they come stumbling out.
He does get drunk later in the series, though.
Well, okay. So they come out of the bar, and you know they drive. They drive to camp, which is right around the corner.
Yep.
Honking the horn, Frank and Margaret get excited that their dream doctor is finally here, and they run outside to join our heroes as they pull up. Hawk introduces BJ to Frank and Margaret. BJ salutes drunkenly.
What say, ferret face?
What say you, ferret face? Is his first words. And then he, like, kind of falls onto Margaret.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And they're all laughing hysterically, except for Frank and Marge, who are just, like, confused and disappointed and just like, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
So we that goes to another commercial break. We fade in to Frank exits his office into our hero's Jeep as the MPs pull up behind him in another Jeep. Well, our heroes stole this Jeep from a general. And it's the same MP from before. They tell Frank that he has to come with them. Hawkeye states, I'd vouch for his character, but he hasn't got any.
Snot! 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 Snot!
Frank yells snot several times, and it looks like Larry is about to crack up when he stops.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it a couple times, and he's just like, snot, 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 and then he stops, and his face is like...
Trying to keep it back. Yeah.
like Kermit when he's mad. So the MPs drive
off.
Maybe
had neuropraxia.
Yeah, maybe. The MPs drive off, leaving our heroes to walk off in their bathrobes, and the PA announcer announces the actors and characters as done in previous season openers, and including introduction of Colonel Potter, which is actually they take this scene is tacked on to the end of this episode, but it's kind of like halfway into the next episode.
Yep.
So I'm not gonna go through it, except I will mention that it states that it is 1600 hours, September 19th, 1952,
mm-hmm.
when...
He reports for duty.
Yeah, Potter reports for duty. This is 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And so ends episode 1, part 1 and 2. Your thoughts on the season opener?
How much time do you have?
This card is like 32 gigs, so we could record for several hours.
Okay. No, I enjoyed this episode. You know, they did a nice job in how Mike Farrell's character is introduced. It doesn't take long, of course. You know, when Mike walks on, BJ starts, he's, you know, fresh out of residency and you know, he's working in a hospital. Now he's completely in a different position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not until, he sees that 12-year-old soldier.
Oh, yes.
He lifts him up, he looks at him, and then he goes off and throws up.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned earlier in the episode, this is when, after Hawkeye goes over to hold him while he's throwing up, after he's done, he sort of holds out his hand as to help him up. And it was at that point right there, you know, Mike Farrell's character is looking up at him, and it's like right there. I think that's where that was.
Maybe I know what I'm in for now.
This is,
so
no,
to speak.
And it, but when he holds his hand out, yeah. He kind of looks up at him, and it's like right there.
This
they
is
just
my
became,
life raft.
This became my brother. This is my brother, you know.
So. I thought that was kind of, I was like.
I mean, they say welcome to Korea, boy. They weren't kidding.
Yeah. When BJ goes off to throw up, I thought it was a little weird that Hawkeye would leave a patient to go deal with that. But, okay.
Well, I think probably by that point, though, the patient was, he had done all he could do.
He put the big messy pad on his head.
They were called pressure bandages.
He put a big pressure bandage on his head.
Messy pad.
Well, anyway. I tried to make it a clean edit, but there you go. You mentioned it again. So I just kind of noticed, you know, replaying it back in my head, you know, when we first meet BJ, you know, he's completely clean from
clean
top,
cut,
to bottom.
Top to bottom.
He is in his...
He's in his Class A's. And,
yeah, Class A's. You know, he's in his uniform. He's all like...
But by the time he gets done, he's dirty, he's muddy, he's drunk.
Yeah, every time something happens, though, he loses...
A little bit of that clean
cutness.
He
loses an article of clothing.
Yes.
So to speak. Not in a dirty
First
way.
It was hat.
Yeah, first he loses his hat on a part of the trail that I'm pretty sure we have walked on.
I'm wondering if that was the that was sort of the where, you know, after we left the visitor center,
yes.
When you go make a right and then you make a hairpin turn to the left and you start going up the
up
hill.
Up that hill.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
that's
wonder.
What I thought. I thought, yeah. It's like that's right there near the visitor. Anyway. Yes, I know. We're bragging that we've been to the MASH site. Blah, 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 blah. Sorry.
Hey, this was a bucket list item for me.
This is true.
I'm proud that we went.
Yeah,
glad that
we're
we
proud
go.
That we went. You're going to listen to it. Yeah,
that's right.
Or hit the fast
And if button. You have the opportunity to go, go.
Go, yes,
The
please.
Only thing I would tell you is unless you like to hike, go in from the west side of the park.
West side?
Go, yeah, go find the address, go from the west side because you'll have to walk through a small neighborhood, but then you're only like... Minutes,
half a mile,
yeah,
like
to get to the site versus the way we came in, which was the main entrance, and it's like an hour and a half, you know, hour and a half walk.
So yeah, I noticed, you know, he first loses his hat, and then loses the flat tire before the bombing. I know I just did it.
The flat tire was before the bombing, because it was after.
Okay.
It was after the Korean family and the daughters in the minefield.
That's when he loses it. Okay.
Because they said, I have never seen a hospital with that primitive condition, and then that's when they lose the tire.
So he loses his hat. Then in the hospital, which we don't see, he loses his jacket.
Yes.
It's probably still there, but he's not wearing it.
Right.
Probably still has, if he had a tie. But it, as things happen, and like you said, you know, so he gets shot at with the jacket off, and then the bombing happens, and he gets all muddy. So we could almost look at it like in Kimpo, BJ is kind of what Frank and Margaret want. And then as he makes his way, he slowly turns into, you know, what everybody else does because they're not army like those two are. And by the time he gets to camp, he's in the robe with the hat and, you know, army what? No.
The
transition there from complete army Class A's to the bathrobe when he's actually there at the 4077.
You know what?
The journey of the character, I think.
You may be right, but I'm going to disagree with you. I think that what we see him ultimately is, what he ultimately is,
mm-hmm.
was how he was to begin with. It's just that, you know, he... You
washing
know, he,
away the army.
Right. And
because yeah, okay.
I mean, he was like, you know, what was it? He said five weeks of indoctrination.
Yeah.
Him. He had a bunch of dumb doctors running around in the mud and all this other stuff. And personally, I think he would have rather just skipped all that and just go right to just being a doctor.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's even like, what was it? In season 5, I think there's an episode called The General's Practitioner. And I remember the colonel, who's the assistant to the general, comes ahead and he says, do you have a doctor that's exceptional? Yes, we do. And he says... Thing is, Hawkeye is just doing. He's humoring us by wearing that uniform.
Yeah,
and I think that's a little bit of BJ. I think, you know, between even Trapper, I think they were just humoring the army by wearing that uniform because they don't want to be an officer. They're doctors.
Mm-hmm, right.
That's what they want to do.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at it as in the 5 weeks of.
But I can certainly see what you're saying.
Yeah,
though.
The five
Absolutely.
Weeks of indoctrination is at Kimpo, and by the time he gets to the 4077, that's all washed off.
Yeah,
he is now. You know, in
just
the
a guy. He's just a
just
yeah.
a guy there.
Yep.
Yeah, he is Hawkeye's number two now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's yeah. No, I think I think what we ultimately see is BJ. I think, you know, him, you know, Mill Valley, California, family man. I think was who he was all along, and the whole aspect of being a captain,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the military. I think was just okay. That's just a layer that. Eventually, like you said,
oh, yeah.
easily
Eroded.
Washes off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I like this episode. It was a good opener. It had everything that a typical MASH episode should
mm-hmm.
have. It had the
yep.
highs, it had the lows, it had everything.
Yep.
And I think they introduced BJ Honeycutt really well. I think it all really worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see the tipping point for the character of the, you know, oh my God, what's going on to the doctor kind of kicking in and going, okay, you know, I need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this 12-year-old kid looking kid is dead, and I need to snap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one horror of war that we didn't see that made him lose his lunch.
Right.
Yeah, and then.
Well, I mean, he's fresh out of residency. I mean, he has seen some of that stuff probably, but in a more prepared way.
Yeah, yeah.
More
formal way.
Whereas
a cadaver,
here, it's, yeah,
yeah, in a college, you know, whatever, to work on it, and then to see the mutilation of war. And I think what you said really hit was, you know, when he's losing his lunch, but then he looks up and Hawkeye offers him the hand. I think if that hadn't happened, the character might have gone like, I can't do this. I don't know what's going on.
Yep.
But, you know, Hawkeye's there. He's our hero.
Yeah, this is my brother. This is, you know, I've met my brother.
So great episode.
Yeah, and, you know, and I've got a lot of notes here that we haven't talked about. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, that scene where the Korean girl, you know, gets hit by a landmine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize this is Hollywood. It's a television show. But the first thing that occurred to me was, I'm pretty sure that had she been hit by a landmine, either she would have been extremely bloody or there would have been nothing left.
Yeah.
Because in that scene, you know, Radar immediately, like you said, jumps in action, goes running up to her, picks her up. She has no blood on her anywhere to be seen.
Right.
And landmines, they're nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that just struck me as being unusual because I honestly, you know, I didn't. That just doesn't strike me as being real.
They were probably not the quantity of blood that they were allowed to show.
That could be.
On this show was, you know, a certain amount.
Yeah.
And even if you look at the shelling scene with the wounded soldiers, the blood that you do see doesn't look like blood.
No, it's not much.
You know, and it is not a lot, but it also just does not look like blood.
Right.
It's like they made
It's corn syrup with like red dye.
Yeah, but they made it a red that was like not a blood color red. You know, kind of. They probably did that on purpose to be like
right.
And even on that, look a little extra fake so that people at home wouldn't be like right.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, when blood hits air, it starts to turn sort of a rusty color, dark red.
True. Really yeah, and dark. It oxidizes.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the iron. Next time on Med Talk.
Yeah, that's right. That's our other podcast. Okay, so yes, debut appearances, Mike Farrell as Captain B.J. Honeycutt and Harry Morgan as Colonel Sherman T. Potter. First and only appearance by Robert Carnes as the Colonel in the officer's bar who notices Radar's captain's bars and corporal stripes.
Oh, yes, he looked familiar.
Yes.
Yeah, he's probably been in a lot of stuff.
I'll tell you, he has an intimidating voice.
Yeah. Probably why they had him play a colonel.
You know this here is an officer's club, right?
Foghorn
Leghorn? Yeah. Why did I just almost sound like I gave him a southern drawl in his voice?
You did.
Anyway. Boys?
I say.
let's see. This would be the third appearance. You mentioned the MP Tom Deaver, or Dever. I'm going to guess Deaver.
I think you said Beaver earlier.
Did I? Well, if I did, Tom, if you're out there listening, I apologize. This will be his third appearance in MASH, and he would make additional appearances, of course. First and only appearance by Reed Crookshanks as the bartender in the Officers Club.
Crookshanks, love that.
Yep. let's see. First and only appearance by Ted Ziegler, or perhaps Ziegler, but I'm going to guess Ziegler. He is the delicatessen sergeant at Kempo.
Ah. He looked familiar, too.
Yep. Season 4, this marks the first time Jamie Farr is actually listed in the opening credits.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I also noticed in the opening of part one, they make it real quick, but you can see BJ running up to the helicopter.
It's a different opening for him, but it only lasts for just so many episodes before they replace it with the one where the camera's kind of looking up at him as he arrives at the chopper. The whole thing about Corporal Captain, while they're talking, you know, BJ replies Coleman Hawkins, right?
Ah, yes.
And apparently this is a play on words referring to the Coleman Hawkins song Body and Soul, supposedly.
Body and Soul?
That's what it says.
I'm thinking Heart and Soul.
That could be.
I don't know that one.
The on-screen quotes from generals in the beginning of the episode and announcing the names of the actors at the end,
mm-hmm.
That's all from the original MASH film because they do sort of the same thing.
Oh, do they?
Mm-hmm. The picture of General MacArthur that Frank, you know, hands in the CO's office, is the same one that was shown in the VIP tent during MacArthur's visit in Big Mac. If that you remember, yeah. If you remember how well Radar he really snazzed up the VIP tent. I mean, it looked really good.
It did.
I mean, he even the bed had like a headboard or whatever, and had stars and stripes and stuff on. I mean, he did a nice job.
He went to Party City.
Exactly right. He got in the DeLorean, came forward 50 years. And I had a note here about Ottumwa. While it is true that Ottumwa is something less than a sprawling metropolis. However, in 1950, census figures put the town's population at about 33,000 people.
That's a
Now, by today's standards, city, yeah. maybe that might be considered small. Maybe by today's standards.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're comparing it to.
Well, that's true.
You got millions of people living in NYC.
Well, that may right.
33,000 is like, oh, that's a couple of apartment buildings in Brooklyn.
Yeah, right. It is suggested, however, that the population in Ottumwa has actually decreased as of 2010, roughly 25,000. But
that's it. We're moving the podcast.
Yep.
Here we come, Ottumwa.
Yeah, we should road trip to Ottumwa, Iowa. BJ states that he is being shipped out at Travis. Travis Air Force Base is near San Francisco Bay Area, where BJ is from, and it's called Mill Valley.
Mill Valley, near San Francisco.
Yep. Little discontinuity error here. After the flat tire is changed on the General's Jeep, they abandon the tire while under fire. However, when they arrive at Rosie's Bar, the spare tire is all of a sudden mounted on the back of the vehicle again.
Well, this is a General's Jeep, so maybe it just reappears.
It saluted itself and hung itself back up, I guess.
Yeah. So. It went rolling after it.
Right. So, while driving to Kempo, Hawkeye and Radar drive down a road with a row of telephone poles. Seems unlikely that those would have been there, 1950.
Yeah, I thought about that, too, when they were passing. I was like, kind of depends on what's around, because although they do mention that they have generators, but are the generators back up at the camp? Because they do have electricity at the camp.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it's strictly generators. But then again, MASH is supposed to be a mobile unit, so
yeah.
Maybe it would be. Yeah, but there are supposed to be towns kind of around.
You know. Okay, yeah. Well, like, you know, when the Korean father says there's a hospital up the road, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, here's a CVS pharmacy right here.
What was the season 2, I think, episode where they find out that the U.S. is bombing a Korean city accidentally?
Oh, the Taedong.
Taedong, yeah. And, you know, they... Probably by this point, they're probably done rebuilding it. But,
you would think so.
Maybe they made it better with electricity.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe.
Yep. Something here that was interesting. And we mentioned, like, in the beginning of the episode, we see that they're raising the American flag.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's, you know, and it's right next to a Korea and the UN flags.
Yes.
Now, according to, I guess, the way things are supposed to be done, this would not occur until 8 a.m., not 5:16 in the morning.
Oh.
And apparently it would have been normal procedure for assembly to be called before the flags are raised.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, there is a little scene, if you pay attention, there's a scene where they're changing the tire and you see the locals walking down the road, but when you see them head on coming towards the camera, if you look in the background, you can see smoke coming up off of the, you know, the pipes on the tops of the tents that are at the MASH site.
Really?
Yeah, you can see it in the background. Yeah. Okay, you mentioned the fight that was going on in Rosie's Bar.
Yes.
Okay. When the guys go through
that
rice paper, you can hear the sound of breaking glass.
Yeah,
it's like, no, that's some pretty tough paper, I guess. I think I noticed this myself when returning to the previous checkpoint, the MP says lots of infiltrators instead of infiltrators.
Oh, yeah.
Little slip of the tongue there. While Radar is being promoted to corporal captain just outside of the Kempo O Club, the shadow of a boom mic is visible over his left shoulder.
Oh,
yeah.
Oops.
It's very brief. It's maybe a couple of seconds.
Gotcha.
Because I think they moved it into position, and then maybe the camera operator is like, no, I can see it. And immediately pulled it off. So anyway. Now, here's something interesting. When Hawkeye is trying to justify taking the general's Jeep,
mm-hmm.
He jokingly puts his hand over his eyes and quizzes Radar. It's olive drab, right? Made in Detroit? In reality, Korean War era Jeeps were supposedly all manufactured in Toledo, Ohio.
Ah.
Yeah. And finally, let's see. When Frank asks Klinger why he's wearing a flowered hat to Morning Drill, he replies, "It's spring, sir." However, a graphic later identifies the episode as taking place in September 1952, which would have been autumn in Korea.
Yes, 1952.
Yeah. So, anyway, but yes, that concludes my notes. But yeah, I like the episode. I do like watching it on DVD much better than on Hulu. No offense, Hulu. But I'd rather see the episode the way it was intended, not the way it was butchered. Again,
yeah.
No offense.
Syndication.
No offense to Hulu or any place else. I got spoiled watching the DVDs, which there's no editing. It's the full episode. They don't chop anything out, as far as we know.
As far as you know. Yeah, but that is annoying when they do that.
Yeah, I mean, supposedly these episodes that you see on the DVD may not have been what you actually see on television, even when the shows were being produced.
That's true.
Because, again, they still had only, 26 and a half minutes, 26 minutes to work with, for station identification, commercials, everything else. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's usually when they put stuff on DVD, they'll put, the director's cut, so to speak, on.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of stuff is cut out for syndication. One of the other podcasts that I listen to, they're going through the Will and Grace series.
Okay.
And they talk about how for syndication, there's an editor who would have to take like 2 to 4 minutes out of an episode for syndication.
Yeah.
And it's like if you're talking about a 24-minute show, that's a lot.
That's a lot of story.
It's like, and I've seen it in when I'm watching, here we go again, Night Court on, I have the DVDs, but I also have it on iTunes.
Okay.
And iTunes, there are certain episodes that are cut up. There's certain scenes that are gone, and I know they're there. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
But I like that joke, So, yeah, syndication is evil.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I watch it on Hulu, for example, it's like, I knew the whole first sequence was edited out, even though we don't see it until part two. It's like the whole sequence where, Burns comes walking into Radar's office, wakes him up. That whole sequence there, that's at the beginning of the first episode.
Yeah, they put it on the beginning of the second part.
Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, kind of weird.
Yeah.
But we're sure that the other episodes are uncut, right? I hope.
Well, I'm going to say probably they are because these were all the standard, 26-minute, half-hour episodes.
Okay.
They weren't an hour episode. Because
I do have the DVDs, but it is just so much easier to put in.
It's easier to open Hulu and play. But, I think, and I need to go back and look because I've got MASH on iTunes as well. And I need to look and see I need to look and see whether or not they break.
If iTunes breaks it up.
Welcome to Cray if it's broken into two episodes. Yeah. So, no, iTunes has it broken into two episodes.
So they have the syndication. I think iTunes usually does have syndication.
Yeah, so that's a little disappointing.
So there you go. Yep. Watch the DVDs.
Yeah, I'm just glad that I have the DVDs because that way I can see how they were originally intended.
Has MASH been released on Blu-ray?
Not that I know of. And my guess is at this rate, with everything going streaming now, even Blu-rays are starting to become scarce.
True.
At least it seems that way. If you go into it's a podcast, I can say it. So if you go into a Best Buy, you look at the music and movie sections, they've gotten a lot smaller. A lot smaller now.
Yeah, their appliance section got bigger.
Yeah. I can appreciate, the video quality of a Blu-ray, but if I can get the same content on an MP4, or on a streaming service and it looks just as good, it's eventually, I think, like I said, we've talked about this, I think, off air, but... I think eventually everything's just going to stream. DVDs are pretty much all but gone. Blu-rays are going to be all but gone. CDs are all but gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or at least it seems that way.
So, good episode. Even the Tapu. I think I'm going to go back and watch the DVD just to see the correct sequence, I suppose.
See how it was originally intended.
So, that was... we're at 1 hour 22 minutes... Do you want to make this one episode?
Yeah, we'll make this one episode, and we'll start with Change of Command.
Change of Command is a different episode.
Yep, so that's the conclusion of this episode's file.
Thank you for tuning in for the beginning of our Season 4 journey of the MASH Files. And, of course, if you have any notes, if you have any questions, you have any comments, please contact us at MASHfiles4077@gmail.com. I got it right that time.
Finally.
Or go to our website, www. Does anybody really say that anymore? TheMashFiles.com. Take you anywhere you need to go within the MASH Files universe.
It'll even take you to the Malibu Creek State Park if you click the right link.
This is true. Yeah, the pictures are up there, and the videos are up there, and everything. So thank you very much for tuning in. I am Cebus Brian, here with...
Cebus John.
And we appreciate your business. Thank you for tuning in and listening. And
is there something you haven't told me?
No. And
why are you winking?
We'll see you... see you again soon.
No. So what are you talking about? Business. Thank you for your business. Wait a minute.
Thank you for your business.
Where's my cut?
It's over there on the table. Those new pickups that I just...